Hello and welcome to Intuitive Conversations. I'm Chantel Neufeld.
I'm Tamara Franz.
And we are here today to share our ideal bookshelf, some of our favorite books. You know a little bit about me. I'm a hypnotherapist living in Canada, southern Manitoba. So does Tamara. And we love getting together often and just talking about all things intuitive. What else do we talk about?
We like to talk a lot about books we've been reading. It seems like one book leads to another. And so the last time we were together, we decided to create our own ideal bookshelf. The top 10 books, or books that have influenced us. Maybe not the top 10, because it's really hard to narrow it down to 10. But here we are, sitting with our ideal bookshelves in front of us. And what's the first book on your list, Chantel?
Well, the first book on my list is The Circle, but we discussed that in our last podcast.
But for people who didn't listen.
Oh, yeah. How would you sum up The Circle in a nutshell? It was, I don't know, I'm just not going to filter this. To me, it was instructions on how to be a witch, but without saying the word witch for people who are scared by that word.
She's got another book. This is Laura Day, okay. The author. She's got another book called How to Rule the World from Your Couch.
Nice.
So it's kind of like a process for ruling your own world in the sense that you envision what it is that you want, and you take the steps to move forward. And it's a very intuitive process, but also concrete. She describes herself as a practical intuitive. So, you know, it's taking the vision and making it a reality.
Yeah, it's all about making a wish, but it goes deeper than that. And Tamara was able to actually make her wish come true and write a book using the principles in this book.
Right. Yeah, I don't think I would have done it if I hadn't been through that process. So it was very exciting.
I'm looking forward to doing that myself.
The first book on my list is called The Dance of the Dissident Daughter. And this is probably one of the most validating books I've ever read in my life. The author is Sue Monk Kidd. And really, it's a memoir. It's her journey out of traditional religion and into discovering the divine feminine. And because I had always struggled with the language in church and how it made me feel kind of second class as a woman, and just really struggling to find a spiritual life, because spirituality had always been so important to me. But something that really connected with who I am. And without throwing out all the wonderful things that I had been nurtured in growing up, but also something that really let me embrace my power as a woman. So I read that book, and it really was life-changing because it gave me permission to move down a path that that really empowered me. And then I made my husband read it, and he kept coming back to me saying, "Are you sure you didn't write this book?" Because he saw so many parallels with my life and with,
So is it more in story form, or was it more in
she kind of shifts back and forth from telling her story, and she'll share dreams that she had and things that happened to her, people that she met, and, you know, different synchronicities and dreams that kind of propelled her forward. But then she'll also talk about spirituality, and so it kind of moves from story to discussion and back to story again. And then around that, I ended up gathering a group of women, because somehow someone else was buying that book, and I was like, "Oh, that book changed my life. You want to get together and talk about it?" And then we ended up pulling in some other women. And so now I have a women's book group that's been meeting for 3 years.
It's incredible.
All from out of that book. So it impacted my life in a big way.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Anything more you want to say about that?
That's good for
the
now.
Gist of it? Okay. Okay, so on my list here, Your Body is Your Subconscious Mind by Candace Pert.
Oh, I've heard of her. Yeah.
Yeah?
I've watched some of her stuff on YouTube. Yeah.
She is a scientist through and through. And she's like started out more in the like medical field, and she wasn't very much into the woo-woo, but then as her studies progressed, she couldn't help but get more into the woo-woo. And she's come to the point where she doesn't care, she doesn't filter her stuff when she's talking in front of large audiences of, you know, intellectual medical doctors or whatever. She just tells it like it is. And she talks about these neuropeptides. And I'm not a scientist by any means, but the way she explains science makes it just, I don't know, real, makes it come to life. And I just found it incredible because I was obsessed, or I still am, with the subconscious mind. And it just seems like a topic where you can know a lot about, but yet feel like there's so much more to know. And when she said the body is a subconscious mind, like where your emotions and your thoughts and your beliefs and all of those, you know, things are stored in your body. Mm-hmm. Like we think that everything is stored in our brain, but that's not the case. It just made so much sense, and I could just listen to her forever. Like it was an audiobook that I was listening to, but she has actual books too, but it was the audiobook that I just kept taking so many notes and just like, oh, you know, like just those aha moments.
I'm going to have to look that one up and listen to it or read it.
It's so good.
Sounds fascinating. Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. My next book was actually a whole series, the Harry Potter series.
I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah, because from a young child, I was always really interested in magic and the magical world and fantasy literature. And I guess because I always felt like there was just so much more than the model, the paradigm that we are conditioned with growing up, that just the material world is all there is. And I always felt like there was so much magic that we weren't tapping into. I remember as a kid, my favorite movie was Escape to Witch Mountain, a Disney movie where the kids have these special powers and things. And I think I just always had the idea that we're so much more than we're led to believe. So that series is just so much fun because it lets you really escape into your magical self. And she creates this world with so much detail and authenticity. Yeah, it's just so much fun. And I had read my kids some of the first books when they were young, and then I told them, now you can read on your own. And so I hadn't finished the series, and then when I ended up in the hospital a couple times during my cancer journey, I brought those books with me and just read the last few, and it was so much fun. It was such a great escape from what I was going through at the time. So for escapism, for magic, for empowerment, I think that's a great series for any age.
That's awesome. The next book on my ideal bookshelf is called The Human Magnet Syndrome by Ross Rosenberg. It's all about how narcissists and empaths tend to magnetically, you know, find themselves together. My parents have that dynamic, and I see it in a lot of other couples too, where there's this like almost unshakable bond between the two of them, because I guess we'll talk about this later in the Feeding Your Demons, but the, you know, what one really needs or doesn't have, the other one has. Mm-hmm. For example, the narcissist, you know, doesn't have those empathic qualities and sees it in the empath, and the empath is like, doesn't have those strong leadership qualities or assertiveness.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's dysfunctional, but it is a lock and key. And so I find when my clients come to me with that sort of problem and I refer them to that book, they get a lot of validation for their situation and they find a way out. And the way out is through self-love. you know, because if you don't love yourself, you'll always be looking for that other person to complete you rather than be an addition to the love you already have for yourself. But if you're, like, that's what the narcissist really is they don't have any self-love, like they, and neither does the codependent, like the empath codependent doesn't have that love for themselves, and so they're just looking for it in the other person, and so much dysfunction can happen along the way. But once you focus on and bring your awareness to the self-love and that's the way out, then miracles can happen, you know, like at these what do you call a Genesis house, like the
a shelter
for women. The percentage of women who go back to their abusive ex is huge, like it's in the 90s. You know, so the people
there,
because
that's familiar and comfortable, right? Mm-hmm. You're always going back to the stasis of what you know.
And it's well, I mean, I could talk forever about this, about early childhood programming, where you're sort of trying to fix the pains of your childhood from age 7 and earlier, you know, unconsciously, subconsciously in your adulthood. And so, like, it explains why, and it also explains how to get out of that, how to get free and get safe and, you know, have a healthy you know, environment for your kids to grow up in, and just be.
It feels like narcissism is an epidemic right now.
And the word is thrown around a lot too, but.
Well, and it feels like, I just look at it that we are kind of nearing the end of the age of ego. And when something is dying, you know, it lashes out. It's never more strong than when it's on the verge of disappearing and fighting for its life. So the ego is really asserting itself.
It's a good way to look at it. Yeah.
That sounds like another fascinating book.
Yeah, it most definitely is. It helped me understand the dynamic between my parents a lot more. And what can I say about narcissists? The thing with narcissists is they don't only like, it's not just, like, they trick everybody else around you, too. Like, when they start out, like, with this girl or whatever, well, I'm saying that, like, it can be a guy or a girl, but let's just say in this case that the narcissist is a guy who's trying to win the heart of this girl and is a great, like, just overly loving, like, just way too soon, like, getting engaged or whatever. Just really overboard in the loving department, but they're also tricking everyone else around them into thinking that they're this wonderful person, so that when they do actually show their true colors later on and start their abusive behavior, whether it's verbal abuse, physical abuse, whatever, that the other people aren't likely to believe it because all they've seen is their good side.
Yeah, I think that's the most damaging thing of being involved with a narcissist is the self-doubt. And, you know, questioning your perceptions, your reality. It's so insidious. And I think the narcissist has convinced themselves as well, not just everyone else. I'm not sure sometimes how conscious they are.
Probably not at all.
Yeah, which makes it...
the gaslighting. I think they call that gaslighting, right?
Yeah.
It's so damaging when you doubt yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Just really erodes self-confidence. Another one to add to the list. My next book is called Expecting Adam by Martha Beck.
Love her.
This book, this one changed my life because I discovered it almost right after my son was born with Down syndrome. And that was a surprise to us because ultrasounds had indicated no abnormalities whatsoever. So he was born and they almost immediately took him out of the room. And for 20 minutes, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't see him. And then they brought him back and started telling me that these were the physical things that they were noticing that indicated that he might have Down syndrome. And so, you know, you start looking for information and scrambling to try to figure out what this means. And someone came to visit me from the Down Syndrome Society and just dumped like a a whole folder full of information, and I started looking through these brochures, Down syndrome and this illness, or Down syndrome and this physical condition, and it's like you start thinking about all the things that you're going to have to deal with that could go wrong with your child. And then I, on a reading list in that folder, I found this book, Expecting Adam. And it was so wonderful. It was such a different portrait of Down syndrome. And Martha Beck did know in her pregnancy that she was going to be having a child with Down syndrome. She was in the academic world at Harvard or someplace like that, some high, really high profile, doing a master's. It was an unexpected pregnancy, I think, first of all. It's been a while since I read it. People were urging her to not go through with it. She persisted and then started having these experiences during the pregnancy and after he was born that were unexplainable, that in the end really led her to believe that there was something special going on, that you have to read it. There's a lot of magic in that book and just things that it just totally changed my perception of my child and why he was coming into my life and our lives and what that could mean for us in a positive way. So that almost from the start, we never felt like we had to apologize for our child. We never felt like he was defective in any way. It was like, no, this child is a gift, and there are, on a soul level, there's nothing damaged about him. And so it was such a, it really opened my world, opened my thinking. And of course, she's wonderful. Like, she's so easy to read. She has, she's funny, she's smart, she's intuitive. So it was exactly my kind of book. And I recommend anything by Martha Beck because she's just so much fun to read. Plus, the other connection, she comes from a Mormon background, so a very conservative religious background, which I really connected with as well. So I just felt so many points of connection with that book.
That sounds amazing. Yeah, and Eli's wonderful. Yeah, so happy and doesn't seem to have the weights that the rest of us.
Yeah, I know. There are days when I would like to just be in Eli's brain for a day and just have that.
The joy.
He lives in the now. Mm. And I call him my bodhisattva.
What does that mean?
Comes out of Eastern religion. And the idea of the bodhisattva is a fully enlightened being who has attained full enlightenment. But they still choose to come back out of compassion to walk alongside the rest of us who are still growing and evolving until we reach that point.
I love that.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, what a different perspective than a lot of people have, right?
Yeah.
That's incredible. The next book on my list, it's called The Anti-Anxiety Toolkit by Melissa Tears. She's a hypnotherapist, but she has put together it's a very thin book, but it has many different, just quick fixes that you can do when you're having anxiety. And I just, she asked a lot of other professionals for their advice and how she could tweak the different things or what she was missing or what she could add or take out, and it's just a very comprehensive how to. It's so great, I wish I had written it. It just brings it all together, all those little things that you can do, and they're relatively easy once you learn them. And I think each person has their own sort of go-to things that they do when they're out of sorts. Whether it be just one deep breath, because I heard somewhere one deep breath is a meditation. So one deep breath, or even just breathing all my energy back to me, breathing everyone else's energy back to them. Mm. Something just as simple as that.
Yeah.
If I'm out in public and I get triggered, where I feel like I'm just going to break down and cry, and I can't because I'm in the checkout line.
well, you could.
I could, but I would rather wait till I get home to break down and cry. I count backwards from 500.
Oh, wow.
Because it turns off the emotional side of the brain and turns on the analytical side of the brain.
Do you usually get down to one?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, because it's really hard to...
Why 500, though?
Because it's hard to, like, you have to actually think about what the next number is going to be.
Right,
you're like,
right.
497, 496, like, because you're trying to switch your brain over,
okay.
Right?
Yeah.
It worked for me very well after my siblings had died, because when you go out in public, and especially if you see someone who gives you, like, sympathy, right, because that can trigger a lot of, like,
yeah.
I do feel sorry for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And another one that worked for me, I use this one in funerals, because in funerals I feel everyone else's emotions.
Oh, yeah.
And so I use the rainbow colors. So it's basically looking for the colors of the rainbow in order. So you look for something that's red, you look for something that's orange, you look for something yellow, for something that's green, and then as you keep going, you look for different things. And there's always the colors of the rainbow.
I love that one, because... When you're doing that, what you're doing is climbing up and down the chakras, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, it works very...
Connecting with your energy
very
centers.
Well.
Yeah. Wow.
What do you use when you're out and about and you cry, or if you're just having a bad day and you want to re-ground yourself? Like, do you have your go-to things, or...?
I think I do what a lot of people do. I numb myself. And I'm working on getting past that, because I want to be fully alive and engaged in the world.
Feel your feelings.
Yeah. So I think that toolkit would be a great thing for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to look that one up.
Yeah. It's very good. Yeah, that's all I have to say about that one right now.
My next one is The Mystic's Poetry Book. And this is just a duotang that I made up myself of poems that I find online that, you know, give me that mystical feeling of connecting with the world, connecting with nature, just all the poems that affirm and expand me, so that I know when I read them, I feel that largeness in myself, that I am more than just a body in a physical world. So I keep adding to it, and I'm a lover of poetry. I like to write poetry. So, you know, when they say if you had to go to a desert island and take 10 books with you, I'd want to have some poetry. So these are just my favorites, and I wouldn't have to take a big book. I could just take this binder and
so it's
open
not
it
something that someone could look up on Amazon and be like, oh, I want that too.
Yeah,
it's your own collection.
That's right. People have to contact me.
Okay.
Yeah.
And contact her for her book of poetry, too.
That one you can get on Amazon.
Yes. And what is your book? Let's just
Called Light and Shadow, Seasons of the Soul. So, yeah, I guess those are poems that would fit into this genre, mystical poetry.
Mm-hmm.
I was raised loving poetry. My mom loves poetry. She read poetry to us, and... I'm a lover of sound, and so playing around with sounds and rhythm, and I think poetry really is the highest expression of human thought and communication, and you can create a world in poetry. You can bring people's senses alive in poetry. You can say some of the deepest things, and in ancient times, poetry was considered one of the highest forms of art. And even to be a leader, to be a political leader, you needed to understand poetry. So, yeah, there had to be something on my list, but I couldn't think of, I have so many poets that I love, Mary Oliver and David White and Rumi, and so I just thought this is a place where I can collect them all.
And what kind of poems do you have in your book? Like, what would be, like, the subject?
In my book, I tend to come up with ideas as I'm out walking in nature or driving in the car, or and often it will connect something that I see in nature with an inner experience. So I guess I would say that my poetry kind of connects the outer and inner landscapes.
Mm.
And it sort of shows how nature mirrors. The seasons of nature kind of mirror the seasons that we go through on an inner level.
It's so true. Wow, that's incredible. All right. The next book on my ideal bookshelf is called Complex PTSD by Pete Walker.
Mm.
This book validated me, like, more than any other book ever has, because it finally diagnosed what I had.
Yeah,
I could talk forever about the details of the book, so you have to read it for yourself. But it basically just described the symptoms of complex PTSD, and how you get them, like where it comes from in childhood, and how it manifests as an adult, and what you can do about it. And yeah, that's pretty much what I could say about it, that it was validating. And I have recommended it to so many people. If you can't afford a therapist, this book is a therapist.
Oh, wow.
And other people have said that too.
Yeah.
Like the lady who recommended it to me said that that book was her therapist for many years. And so it's rare that you find a book that can be your therapist.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, definitely.
I think a lot of people think that PTSD happens because you go through something horrific and traumatic. That's a huge, big event, like going through war, or a terrorism attack, or a car accident, or something like that. But I was told after my cancer journey that that's a form of PTSD. Like when I think you're in an ongoing, and relationships can cause that, and family conditioning can cause that, and it's so subtle. It can be so subtle over time that you don't realize that you've developed mechanisms for coping with trauma because it's been an ongoing trauma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the complex PTSD part is more like childhood, I think, because when you develop those before age 7, then that's like your patterns for when you're an adult too, and you don't think of it as abnormal. You think of your life as normal, even though other people looking in would think that it's a horrific situation to live through. Yeah, PTSD is, I know people compare their wounds to other people's wounds, and they say, oh, well, you know, this one is bigger than that one. But there's no such thing, because everybody interprets things differently. I'm the oldest of 10 kids. We are all vastly, vastly different, even though we have the same parents, because we interpret information differently. You know, it's like the way you see the world, the way it's the belief that you come to when a situation happens. So the same situation can happen, and one kid could think, oh, you know, this means I'm a bad person. And the other one could just be like, oh, this means that my mom's having a bad day.
Yeah.
Right? Two vastly different outcomes of the same event.
Yeah.
And even if it is a small thing, it can impact someone in a huge way if they come to the childhood belief that, you know, something is very, very wrong.
Yeah.
So it's our beliefs that guide us.
I'm adding all your titles to my reading list as you go. My next book is called Pathways to Bliss by Joseph Campbell. And really, I could have put anything by Joseph Campbell on here, but that's one of the more readable ones. He was a, I don't know what you could call him, a mythologist. He had, as a child, developed a real fascination with mythology, starting with Native American mythology, and then as he grew up and studied and became an academic, he was interested in mythology from around the world. And he's the one that charted the hero's journey by comparing myths from all different cultures and realizing there was a pattern there. And once I discovered the pattern of the hero's journey, it helped me so much to make sense of the world. And I think the biggest thing is that it helped me to take a step back. Because when you're in something traumatic or going through something really hard in your life, it can be really hard to pull yourself out and look at that from a wider perspective. I think that's what your timeline therapy helps people to do. But when you know the pattern of the hero's journey, you can look at that and say, oh, this is the stage that I'm in right now, and I know that I'll get through it. And actually, as I move through it, there's going to be a treasure for me. There'll be something that's going to enlarge me or make me stronger or make me understand myself better. So learning that pattern, and as an educator, I started using that in my ELA classes with students, where they could find the hero's journey pattern in the books they were reading, in the movies they were watching, in life events that they were going through. And I just think that it's very empowering for people to be able to see that pattern in their life and to see themselves as their, as a hero or heroine on their life journey, going through these different stages. And it really helps you to take an enlarged perspective. So yeah, I recommend Joseph Campbell. Some of his stuff is a little bit academic, but Pathways to Bliss is more like a talk that he gave to an audience, and so it's much more conversational and readable. But there's also a series of conversations that he had with Bill Moyers called, The Power of Myth. So that's another good one for people to introduce themselves. But it's fun once you know the hero's journey and you're watching, you know, Star Wars, which actually was created based on the hero's journey. George Lucas read Joseph Campbell and realized and created the Star Wars trilogy based on the hero's journey. So, but other movies too, like any movie that you watch will have either the whole pattern or parts of it in there. So it's fun. Then you realize that somehow there's a larger meaning. We're part of these patterns that are repeating in our lives, and it's not meaningless and it's not random.
Yeah, I came across the hero's journey in, I think it was a marketing training that I was doing, and the guy was talking about building a bridge from where someone is now to where they want to be, or where we were 5 years ago to where we are now, and using the different, you know, kind of like a bridge with wooden planks, you know, as each plank symbolizing a part of the hero's journey. And if we look back on our own lives, we can definitely see, you know, the different planks, the different steps that we took. I was reminiscing with my sister yesterday about who I was 5 years ago. Totally different person. Like, I went to my first therapist, and she told me, like, be compassionate with yourself, like, be gentle on yourself, you're doing the best you can, and that was a brand new concept for me at the time. She told me, she recommended this this class that I should take. It was a mindfulness class, and I paid my $100, and I went to the first class, and we had our yoga mats laid down in them. They had these chimes, and it's similar to the classes that I lead today at the yoga retreat, but I thought it was so woo-woo and crazy at the time. I didn't go to all 10 classes. I just went to the one class and then just left and thought, these people are nuts. So that goes to show how someone can change in a few years just by learning what things mean. And
right. And you can approach things in a different way, because when I was diagnosed with cancer, having that pattern in my brain, in my awareness, it really helped me to decide how I was going to go through that journey and to see it as a heroic journey.
So your perspective wasn't
fear-based. Yeah, I had a wider perspective on it. And it, I mean, it's not like, I have this magical, easy journey through treatment and everything. There were really hard things. Losing your hair and walking around bald is hard as a woman. But when you have that perspective, somehow it connects you with every hero that's ever walked their own journey, and you can almost look on your own life as a movie that you're moving through. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it helps you to be a little more objective and to
not be the victim.
Yeah, that's right.
To become your own hero.
Yeah, right. You move from being a victim to being a hero and deciding, how am I going to face these challenges, and who are my allies, and what could be the treasure in this situation?
Yeah, that's incredible. Love it. That reminds me of the Feeding Your Demons book, which we'll discuss a little bit later.
You keep throwing in these teasers.
I know. It's so good. So the next book on my list is totally different than the rest of the books. It's not really self-help, but it's called The Truth by Neil Strauss. Okay, so he has written other books that are, I don't like them at all. Like, they're manipulative. Like, oh. how to get a woman, you know, oh, like, okay. that sort
yeah.
of a thing.
Yeah.
And I hate anything manipulative. But he wrote the book The Truce as his journey dealing with the, like, an inner childhood wound, which expressed itself as him not being faithful to his girlfriend. And, you know, trying to find what was missing in his life by, you know, sexual experiences mm-hmm. of all types. And so me being homeschooled and very sheltered, me reading this book was just like, kind of like being able to explore the world of all of the forbidden things without actually mm-hmm. doing them myself. So he goes through this, his life path over several years, you know, having all these different experiences and what he learned through them, and he went to these treatment centers for sexual addiction, and he, like, he had EMDR therapy. He explains it in detail in the book. What I love about the book is that he goes from story, most of it is story, but he also puts in there how he was helped, like, little bit by little bit, and it gets to the end, and it's a good ending, and he lives happily ever after, of course.
So is this the book he wrote after writing all the How to Get a Woman?
Yes, yes.
So he learned not to manipulate people.
Yes, he did. So, I just like the non-filtered books so much. Mm. Like,
people who are honest and authentic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, like, and owning your mistakes, like, and owning that we all are human, and, you know, like, yeah. just owning it. And I could relate to a lot of the things that he was going through too, like trying to find peace, trying to find fulfillment, trying to find love, like trying to overcome a childhood wound. I could relate to it a lot.
Yeah.
And so I just, it's one of those books that when I picked it up, I couldn't put it down.
Oh,
and
wow.
I just kept on like taking screenshots. I first had it in my Kindle, and then I got the actual physical copy too.
Sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it was.
My next book is called The Three Only Things by Robert Moss. And again, anything by Robert Moss could go on my list. We're talking about woo-woo. By any typical standard, he's an extremely woo-woo kind of person. He describes himself as a dream archaeologist.
There's a title for you.
He sees his mission in the world as kind of re-elevating the status of dreams and how we see dreams and how we work with dreams. He has an incredibly fascinating life story, which includes a couple of near-death experiences, an experience of actually visiting himself as a child in his future self, to reassure himself, because as a child he was sickly and was home a lot and lonely. And as a child, he had a vision of this white-haired man coming to tell him things would get better. And as he got older, he realized that was his own self. So he doesn't even use the term universe. He uses the term multiverse because he believes that there are many realities that we move through that are parallel, that are happening all at the same time. And he's written a lot of books about dreaming and the kinds of experiences that he's had dreaming. This book, The Three Only Things, talks about dreams, synchronicities. Oh, and I'm trying to think of what the third one is right now. It's been a few years since I read it. But these are the things that we kind of dismiss. Oh, it was only a coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was only my imagination. And he's saying, no, these are not only things. These are significant. When we have a coincidence in our life that's meaningful, don't call it an only thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because these are signs that speak to us about the meaningfulness of life. And there's guidance there, and there's information in there that's important to who we are. And so reading Robert Moss just really opened my world to considering that reality is a lot more multifaceted than we think, and that there's meaning in all the little things that happen to us. That and if you start keeping a journal of those things, keeping a record, then you realize your life is a lot less random than you think.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just so incredible. Like the kinds of experience he has, I think when you adopt a perspective that life is meaningful and you go into the world expecting to see signs, expecting to receive guidance in different forms, it happens.
Or expecting that someone will come into your life who needs what you.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Wayne Dyer, instead of I'll believe it when I see it, I'll see it when I believe it, right? When you believe, and yeah, he's just extremely fascinating to read. He's got another book called Sidewalk Oracles, which is all about fun games to actually increase the synchronicities in your life and to different games that you can play to create synchronicities and to find the signs and look for guidance. So I really enjoy him, and yeah, I think he's kind of a pioneer.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of when my brother and sister died. See, I was raised very, very religious in several cults, and as an adult, I had gotten to the point where I was atheist or agnostic.
Yeah.
So just not believing in anything because the religious triggers were just too much, you know, like the words, the just anything. And so that was how I coped with that. But when my brother and sister died, I could no longer be an atheist or an agnostic because of all of the synchronicities that happened, like how they contacted me after they had died. And there was no possible way that any of these things could have been coincidence. I was working in shipping, and I went back to work a week after my sister died, and an order came in of doors I was supposed to package, and her name is Alin, and the who we were supposed to ship these doors to was Alin International. And I worked for this company for years, and they always had the same people that we shipped to. Never did we ship to that company, and never did they ship to it again that I know of.
Oh, wow.
Like, it was just, yeah.
Yeah, that got your attention.
Yes. And there were songs on the radio, like when I'd walk into the store, like, was their song, like, or, you know, when I'm driving, like, just, they spoke to me directly, and no one could really understand how, and, you know, I mean, people would say, oh, well, that's just because you're bringing them to your awareness because they just died. Well, maybe so, but they were definitely synchronicities.
Yeah.
And I believe that they're my angels now. Like, I feel like I can ask for help and that they're there. If I ask, they come and they help me out.
Oh,
beautiful. Reminds me of, like, the next book on my list called Ask Your Guides by Sonia Choquette.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Have you heard of her?
I've read a couple of her books, yeah.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. I love her, like, her voice, her attitude, her way of being. And I love that she is so in sync with, like, synchronicities and guides and how there's different kinds of guides. There are these helper guides that if you want a parking spot, you just send them on ahead to find it for you, you know, or if you want a certain thing of a certain color and, you know, like sometimes we need a certain article of clothing that we go shopping for, we'll send your guides on ahead. Like, so many things we just don't ask for. And if we asked for them, we would get help. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's so interesting how the universe will speak to you in synchronicities that connect with your way of thinking and being in the world. You talked about music, right? And we're both musicians. And I often find that synchronicity speaks to me through music or through books. Like, I've talked about being chased by a book where I remember when we moved to Ontario, and one of the first things I did was go get a local library card at the local library. And I was standing in line taking books out, and I looked to my right, and on the counter I saw a book with a certain title. Looked to my left, and there was another copy of that same book. And then I took my son to his gymnastics lesson, and there was a parent there reading that book. And then the next time I went to the library, I said, I've seen this book 3 times. I should probably take it out. I went to look it up. It wasn't on the shelf. And then when I stood in line, the person in front of me was taking it out.
Oh, wow.
So that kind of thing, like, you your attention is caught, and it's a language, it's, in a way, it's your love language being spoken to you, and you really need to pay attention.
Wow. Incredible.
My next book is called Soulcraft by Bill Plotkin. He's a depth psychologist, and he runs in Colorado a place called Animas Valley, which takes people on vision quest type experiences. This book is about soulcraft. It's about connecting with your soul and listening to what your soul has to tell you. And he writes about experiences of people going on these vision quest experiences, but he also has many different practices that you can use. A lot of it is about connecting with nature, and again, that idea that nature is the outer landscape that mirrors your inner landscape, and that you can connect with your soul by connecting with nature. And it's just really fascinating. It's the kind of book that really deepens you. We live in a culture that's very superficial and shallow. And people are conditioned to believe that, you know, their life is about having pleasurable experiences, and not that there's anything wrong with that. But if you never go deeper, then you're really missing out on connecting with yourself authentically and really figuring out what it is that you're here to do. And he has a sort of a model for human development that mirrors the cycles of nature. And he goes through the different stages of life and really explores what happens at that stage. And if we move through that in a mindful way and in a soul-centered way, how that deepens us and carries us forward, so that in our adult lives we're really bringing forward what it is that we're here to bring to the world. And it's really beautiful, and I think the kind of book, really, like if our education system was modeled along that vision of human development, I think kids would come out of school really knowing who they are, prepared to develop themselves in a way that is so fulfilling. And yeah, it's just really deep and nurturing, this soulcraft work. So that's a book that I really recommend for people who want a deep spirituality, but that also really anchors them in the world to contribute something and have fulfilling relationships. Soulcraft. And I just love the name.
Yeah, right? It's perfect. All right, the next book on my list is called The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk. Have you heard of this book? Or
you've talked about it. You've mentioned it.
I've mentioned it all the time, because the body really does keep the score. Like, it means that your body remembers traumatic events. Your body remembers everything. Like, it explains how people can have these triggers, like how you can feel your full body just tensing up or reacting to something. Like, I remember a few years ago, my husband had just left his belt on the bed in a certain way, and I walked into the room and I had a panic attack.
Oh.
And like, no one could have seen that coming. Mm-hmm. And you know, stuff like that makes you just wonder, like, what the hell just happened to me? Like, that was so weird. You know, sometimes even music can trigger, like if a music was playing during, like a certain song was playing during a traumatic event, that can bring back all of the feelings in your body. I don't know, like, does anything come to your mind when you think of this idea, like any stories of your own or of other people's?
Well, I think I'm just learning to reconnect with my body, because I think when I talked before about numbing, I think a lot of us do that, and we're just
like it's a coping mechanism.
Well, and we live in such a mental society that everything is about the brain and your thinking, and in the age of ego, you know, the brain and thoughts rule everything, and you learn to disregard your body. And I think your body is very intuitive. And so when you disregard your body, you cut off your intuition. So I'm at a point in my life where I'm realizing how much I distance myself from my own knowing. But as a guided imagery and music therapist, I have learned that as people listen to music and image with it, they do experience in their body what they're experiencing in their imagery. Mm-hmm. And your body has its own intelligence. Every cell has an intelligence. And so by distancing ourselves from our body, we've lost a lot of our intelligence.
And intuition.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the healers that I saw was actually online, so she was on the other side of the world. It was through video chat, so she had me stand up and really ground myself in where I was standing. And then she asked me a series of questions, and these were like typical limiting beliefs that a lot of people have. And basically, the answer was going to be yes or no. And I wasn't to answer yes or no, but my body actually leaned forward for when it was yes and leaned backwards.
The human pendulum.
Yes. Yeah. And that just was like a whole new like aha moment for me, that the body does have an intelligence and knows things that often we don't really think about in our conscious minds. So for example, for my like dieting or for the things that I eat, I didn't really know what was behind that. But one of the limiting beliefs behind that was, she asked a question, I'm trying to think of the exact words now. It was basically like, do you believe that like there's going to be a shortage of food and that somehow you're going to starve and you'll need to have excess weight to survive? And my subconscious belief said yes. That is what I was.
Well, growing up in a family of 12, yeah. I could see where that would
come up. And I also had this limiting belief about that having extra weight on me protected me, like from a sexual predator.
Yeah.
Like where if I would walk around in downtown, like if I was a chunky girl, then I wouldn't be as, you know, sought out than if I was a pretty skinny girl, you know? And so that was my subconscious belief. And like just bringing that to my awareness and, you know, being able to shift those through therapy, like through subconscious therapy, was incredible.
Yeah. There's a lot of powerful bodywork methods that I have heard and read about. And I have just started reading the energy medicine book by Donna Eden, which was like the pioneering book in energy medicine, because I am trying to reconnect with my body. Mm. And I've heard from massage therapists who will say that when they massage people can have all kinds of reactions and start crying when you're massaging a certain part of the body, because there is stuff, memories are stored in there and trauma is stored in there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's so much we really underestimate. Or the intelligence of the body.
And especially knowing now that the body is the subconscious mind, it makes so much sense because the subconscious mind stores all of our memories, emotions, all that. So, and stores everything that we've ever come in contact with, even if it hasn't come to our conscious awareness, because the reticular activating system filters that out, so we only see about 7 things when we're actually, through all our senses, getting in millions of things all the time.
Yeah. There's so much. So much we're not aware of.
So that was the last book on my list.
Was it?
Other than the books that we really want to go into depth about in our next episode. So just whatever you have left on your list, go ahead.
Okay, I'll go through these quickly. The Circle we've talked about. So that was on my list. Yeah. A book that I'll return to again and again because it is a process for making a vision concrete. Many Lives, Many Masters was really mind-bending for me. This is Brian Weiss, who was a psychologist and used hypnotherapy to help people deal with trauma and phobias. And he was working with this one woman who had a particular phobia, and he hypnotized her and asked her to go back to the origin of this particular phobia. She ended up in a different lifetime, which was totally not part of his paradigm. He was conventionally trained.
Okay.
He didn't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. But to his credit, he was curious
Just went along with it.
Yeah, which is the stance of a real scientist.
And a good therapist.
Yeah. And that led to his life work that he's done with regressing people into previous lives and in between lives. And it was just mind-blowing to me to, I guess, be introduced to the whole idea of reincarnation, and which I had come across in different places, but, you know, my skeptical mind always wanted a more considered approach, a more
proven
structure. Yeah. And not just, oh, well, this is,
this,
you know,
could be, or this could be.
This is part of our religious belief system, mm-hmm. So I believe it. And so this book has case studies in it of different clients that he worked with and how they experienced their previous lives and in between lives. And being a person who's so curious about what's beyond, I just was fascinated with it. And then I have the Lord of the Rings trilogy, J.R.R. Tolkien, which is kind of, I've shocked people over the years by saying I read this book like many people read the Bible. and I think I read it like the Bible should be read, which is the truth of mythology and archetypes. And
metaphorically.
Metaphor, and says so much about the nature of good and evil. So much about the nature of true friendship. It's a hero's journey. It's an epic heroic journey. And there's just so much wisdom in it. And I love fantasy worlds because they just expand you. They make you feel so much larger than you are. They're filled with magic and so much just truth about on a cosmic level. Mm-hmm. So I've read that book to all my kids when they were growing up. I was a good parent and raised my kids on Tolkien.
Nice.
I come back to it again and again and again, watch the movies over and over again, and this is just part of the vocabulary of our family. And I go to mythology. I could have put a book of mythology, Greek mythology, Norse mythology in here because I love the large truths that come through mythology, and this idea of living our own mythology is fascinating to me. So I couldn't not have
that
Lord of the Rings on my bookshelf. So that's it.
That's your list. Okay. Well, the books that were left on my list that we're gonna discuss in another episode are The CIA Pattern by Sarah and Sean Carson. CIA stands for Council of Advisors, and it's basically
Inner Advisors.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Council of Inner Advisors. So it's people that you choose who are sort of, I don't know if idols to you, but people dead or alive
that you admire
that have different personalities and you, different perspectives to, you know, give you different perspectives on things in life. The other one is Feeding Your Demons. So good. But we will get into that another day. And I also had the book Minds by Sarah Ewan. And it's case studies of soldiers with PTSD who have received hypnotherapy and the details of how they were treated and what they experienced between appointments and after appointments. The huge difference that hypnotherapy can make.
Yeah. And we saw so many connections between all three of those books, mm-hmm. that we wanted to talk about them kind of
more in
depth. As a trilogy, yeah.
Yes, that's awesome. All right, so thank you for joining us. And until next time, keep following your heart song.
Right, and keep reading.
Yes.